This is not a relationship that fits neatly into the black and white categories like friend or rival.
Certainly not. That's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on Friday speaking about U.S. and Chinese relations in anticipation of President Hu Jintao's visit to the White House this week. It's familiar for Americans, this idea of a bipolar world. It comes directly out of the Cold War, which we were just speaking about there in terms of the military-industrial complex. But there's an argument to be made that in this decade, perhaps it's the confrontation between the U.S. and China this time that will be the dominant narrative militarily, economically, and even culturally, as China challenges the domination of English in the world. Is that too simplistic, though? And are we looking at an American decline not in relation to China alone, but in relation to a whole bunch of emerging cultures and nations and powers expressing their power in various ways around the world? We're joined by Gideon Rachman, chief foreign affairs commentator for the Financial Times and author of the book Zero Sum Future, American Power in an Age of Anxiety. Good morning to you.
Morning.
And Simon Tay, who's chairman of the Singapore Institute of International Affairs and author of Asia Alone, The Dangerous Post-Crisis Divide from Americans. Simon, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Gideon, I'll begin with you. Let's talk a little bit. Do you believe that the U.S.-China relationship is a kind of bipolar dynamic in world diplomacy and in power politics in the world in the same way that the Cold War was between the U.S. and the Soviet Union a generation ago?
No, I don't think it's the same, but I do think that the China-U.S. relationship is now the most important one in the world. They're the two largest economies, they represent very different political systems, and they're locked together on a whole variety of issues, whether it's currency, global economic imbalances, climate, military rivalry in the Pacific. So I think that it's an increasingly tense relationship which will define international politics, but it's not the Cold War.
And Simon Tay, when you describe the dangerous post-crisis divide from America, what precisely are you talking about?
Much the same as Gideon, in the way that we see the rise of China and the rise of others in Asia and elsewhere. But the call of the book, Asia Alone, is that really Asia is not ready to go alone, and that if America is absent, if America is unable to come to the table, there would be, you know, very bad consequences for both Americans and Asians. So, again, I don't really see the bifurcation between U.S. and China as an either-or issue. We really have to have both at the table.
Although it felt the very either-or as Bob Gates, the Secretary of Defense, was in China last week, Simon Tay, really having high-level military meetings for the first time since the year 2000 when there was a real break in the issue over Taiwan. And I'm wondering, Chinese people are used to hearing in their domestic media the notion that the U.S.'s mission is to contain China in the Pacific and that it is China's mission to push back militarily on the U.S. Do you think that's going to play out much more publicly over the next few years, Simon Tay?
Well, I think when I made this call for, you know, America to be there in Asia to keep engaging China, and Gideon's right, it is the most important relationship for all of us, not just the two countries involved, it doesn't mean it comes naturally. I think there are always hawks on both sides. We notice this more in China these days, when their kind of assertiveness, their pride bordering on a kind of fervent nationalism has really peaked in this time. But those voices are also there in a very different way in Washington, D.C. So it's not a relationship that's necessarily going to go well if left alone. It really takes focus to keep it on the right track.
All right. Well, Gideon Rachman of the Financial Times, let me ask you about the kind of focus that Simon Tay is talking about there. I mean, many people have talked about the rise of China and therefore the decline of the United States, but it is possible that the rise of China will simply be integrated into an already U.S.-led or dominated international order. What kind of things does the United States now have to put in place in order to make sure that their decline does not follow China's rise?
Well, it's a tricky one. I think to some extent there is an element of zero sum. A more powerful China does mean a slightly weaker America, in the sense of there are various issues on which the two countries just aren't going to agree. They have different interests, climate, currency, and to some extent, there's a shoving match going on. At the moment, the two sides, neither can get the other to move. America is still a bit more powerful, but it's found that on, say, global economic imbalances at the G20, they just couldn't isolate the Chinese. They couldn't get their way. And I think increasingly you're going to kind of have a deadlock there over a range of issues. It's true that the global order is still kind of structured around America as the world's sole superpower. But I think the Chinese won't want to challenge that directly because that's too dangerous. But I think they see it as a kind of accumulation of force over many years. And as Simon said, I think that you've had an upsurge in Chinese confidence and therefore assertiveness, really in the wake of the global economic crisis, America's looked much weaker.
I think, Gideon, though, we're dancing a little bit around. Hu Jintao told the Wall Street Journal this morning that the economy based on the dollar is a thing of the past. It seems to me that if you look at the balance sheet on both sides, either in terms of population or economic growth, the U.S. can't win. The U.S. can't even be a close second to China if you look at the long road down, say, 10, 20, 30 years. Gideon Rachman?
I'd say 50 years. You know, I mean, I think that what's happening is that China's catching up very fast, and that by about 2019, the current projections are, the Chinese economy will be larger than that of the United States. And as you say, given the relative size of the populations, there are four times as many Chinese as Americans. They don't have to get as rich on a per capita basis to have a much larger economy fairly swiftly. And then, yeah, you're right, it does affect the balance of power. But I think initially that will be expressed in the Pacific. I mean, the point is that America is now so dominant that it's the dominant military power in the Pacific. American ships patrol within 12 miles of the Chinese, the Chinese coast. The Chinese don't see that as something that's going to be that way forever, and I think
exactly.
They're right about that.
Gideon Rachman is the chief foreign affairs commentator for the Financial Times, author of Zero Sum Future, American Power in an Age of Anxiety. How significant of a transformative moment is this, Simon Tay, before we go? My daughters will graduate from college at about the time that the U.S. ceases to be the number one economy in the world.
I'm tired of straight line projections. I think 20 to 30 years out is too early to call as a certainty. But certainly, if we don't do something, if America doesn't listen to the wake-up call, doesn't find ways to get itself out of this crisis and ways to work multilaterally, then what Gideon and others are saying will come about.
Simon Tay is author of Asia Alone, The Dangerous Post-Crisis Divide from America. What did Cho En-Lai say about the French Revolution 100 years after it happened? It's too early to know its impact. Thanks to both of you.